What is happening? Welcome to another episode of The Craft. My name is Nick Pollock, and we have the trade deadline approaching. I'm going to be spending the trade deadline itself with Paul Spohr on that Monday. I believe it's August 3rd or so this year. It's a little bit weird, but I will be spending that Monday with Paul Spohr as we normally do, our extravaganza. Eno, I'm sure you're going to do something too, but before then, I got to bring Eno on so I can ask him that question. Eno, thanks for joining me today.
Thanks for having me. I'm going to be with Derek doing a three-hour live Rates and Barrels at the live studios in Chicago. So I'm flying into Chicago to be all studioed up.
Oh, man. So when you say live, you don't mean like we're doing live or whatever. Like this is actually in-person event in Chicago.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if we'll have people in the studio, but.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, if they do, you got to let everyone know. We'll share with that more next week, of course. But here's the thing, you know, it is July 22nd. We are within 2 weeks of the trade deadline, right? I've heard nothing. It's just like David Peterson. Is there any other trade that I'm forgetting that has been of any significance?
Well, everybody's in, you know, who's out? You know, the only teams that are like obviously out are, you know, we'll talk about these teams, I think, but the Mets, I don't even know if the Blue Jays are obviously out yet, but, you know, the Mets and Reds feel like their season looks pretty dead. The Royals, the Rockies, the Angels, but the Angels, even the Angels, you know, have said, we're not sure that we're going to trade, you know, Reed Detmers and Jose Soriano. So, you know, I think that the lack of guys that are, you know, on the market, but lack of sellers is really affecting things. Giants will probably sell an arm. I have seen no reason for them to hold on to Robbie Ray.
Sure. Right. I mean, so we're going to run through all of the teams here. And I do want to point out that, you know, you actually helped make an article on The Athletic, which is the big board or the trade deadline big board 2.0, the top 75 plus players ahead of the August 3rd deadline. You, Tim Britton, Johnny Flores Jr., and Chad Jennings. And I got to say, you know, you got the "and," which is really nice. It's just like in film. You're the last one. And it said, "and Eno Sayers." How's that feel?
Starring. That's in my head. Sorry, did I say that out loud?
Right. So you do list Jose Soriano and Reed Detmers as the 4 and 5 on the big board here.
One of the keys, though,
they're
is
controlled
what
both
color,
of them through 2028.
What color is the light?
Right. So this is actually took me a moment. On this article, it has the first five are all this yellow dot. Is all it is. It's deal likelihood and just a yellow dot. And I understood eventually, because there's a red and a green one too, that this is maybe, but when you just throw a yellow dot on a screen,
it's not obvious what that means right away. All right.
Yeah, they're maybe
that into advisement.
Those are maybes. You're right. You have as a red, he's controlled through 2027. Why do you think that?
I guess there was some actual like source information that came out. I don't know. I close watched Ryan's 6 home run game.
Yeah. Same here.
Day. And I remember I saw something afterwards that said, well, Joe Ryan was on the trade block, but now he's not. I mean, I think one thing that would have been worrisome to anybody acquiring him, not only the home run thing with the livelier ball and all and his history of home runs, but just the fact that he was like 91, 92 at the end of that game.
Well, I do want to point out that, though. Hold on. I've got something for you, you know.
All right.
Okay. So, yeah, this game, 6 home runs. I'd say 2 of them were on ridiculously, like, how did you hit that out home fastballs up and in? Like, one was just, like,
one was above the zone. Yeah.
It was insane. It was like Jazz Chisholm hitting it off of
and even the
Dubon 22 or 23.
The sweeper wasn't great. The sweeper
that was terrible.
Got hit out. That was
the
in the
stinker
middle zone.
Inside was terrible. There was a
the
kind
splitter
of up
was,
and away.
Yeah. You know, the splitter was down in the zone, but it wasn't, it was in the zone, I guess. So maybe a hanger. I don't know.
So like 2/3 were like, okay, fine. Yeah. But how I view this, imagine you're Joe Ryan. You're on the Twins. You've had some velocity things earlier on in the season. And then you've really been like, hey, I'm 93, 95 now. And it's a 7-2 ball game. You have been sitting 93, 94 for the first 2 innings. And then you let up another run. And then you start to see him He's at 91, 92 for the rest of the game after.
He's just lobbing it in.
Totally just, I understand being checked out in some way at that point and not trying to push it because you might be a little more fatigued and frustrated and everything. You're just like, you know what? I'm not going to hurt myself over this stupidity. Yeah. And that's how I translate that, right?
As I mean,
his velocity's down. He's now hurt or something like that.
That's possible because my takeaway from the game, one of them was that I did not get good vibes about the Twins as a team in their direction this year because, you know, they're, you know, they could say, hey, a run gets us back in it. But, you know, the announcers were talking about how, oh, we get to take a look at Alan Roden now. We get to take a look at Ryan Kreidler now, which is the kind of language you hear from a rebuilding team. So,
yeah,
I think they already sort of it felt resigned. Vibes wise, the team felt resigned. It did not feel like it had a lot of fight in it.
And that's the real topic I want to get to today. It's not necessarily about who is buying, who is selling. It's about what happens after that. Right. Assuming these guys do move teams. Is it the Ryan Yarbrough situation, which to me was the most significant trade of 2023 because it was the Royals trading Ryan Yarbrough, the Friday Pirate, to the Dodgers, which meant that their number six, who wasn't getting enough opportunities, was now in the rotation. And that was Cole Reagans. And it was the most, oh my gosh, I could not tell you how excited I was when that happened. I'm trying to see if there is any sort of deal that is made that we look back on and go, oh man, that's when he was able to step in and this guy was called up because, you know, it's just the whole domino effect of it. There might not be.
I went into this a lot
and there aren't really many of them. Okay.
Yeah.
But we're going to talk about those specifically on this podcast. And with the Twins, I mean, maybe Culpepper a little bit. We saw him for a moment, I believe this year. Last year. And I wasn't very excited about him then. I confused him with Preetler for a second there. But I don't have a whole lot, you know, with the Twins. Is there one that came to your head that's like, okay, that guy might get an opportunity. I'm looking forward to him hopefully seeing more innings in August and September.
Well, I don't know how many innings he has in him because Kendry Rojas, you know, topped out basically at 84 innings in 2023 and more recently 69 innings. And he's somewhere in between a reliever and a starter in terms of his opportunities, the length he's gone in games, and even his command. I think he has the, you know, Kendry Rojas he's a lefty from Cuba on the Twins. I think that he has the arsenal of a starter. The changeup looked pretty good. The fastball, at least at the velo that he was maintaining, looked all right. He had two different fastballs. To my eye, the command wasn't bad, but then he complained of something on his finger, took a practice toss, and they looked at the finger. They talked about maybe him having some blister issues. And then the next two batters, he kind of fell apart, not only command-wise, but like composure-wise. He was one of those guys where he gave up, you know, it was to Kwan. So I don't know if he thought it was a homer right away, but he gave up like kind of hard contact in the air and his shoulders just slumped. And he gave up a blast. It ended up being like a double, but I don't know. I there was some stuff that I didn't like, but if I take away the composure and you take away the injury risk and all that, if he found his way to starting, I see a starter package there. So I don't know. I think they'll probably just piggyback him with Paredes like they did in that game. And it may not have any short-term value, but it is a name that I kind of want to remember because it's a pretty good changeup. It's decent velocity.
Right. It's like 94, 95 on the left side for Rojas, correct?
Yeah. Yeah.
I do want to note when you're talking about like body language is always such a weird thing to me because I always struggled as a player, like, how do I show to my teammates that I care and like I'm focused and I'm in on it, even though I might not look like it, right? Because I knew I was as competitive as anyone out there and everything, but I also, you know, had to work to not show it, you know, not to really allow it to take over for me, right?
Yeah.
And I think about like Christian Javier. Anytime you saw Christian Javier pitched, even in his picture on our Pitchless website is like the saddest face you've ever seen, right? And when anything happened, nothing. He didn't show anything. I mean, look at Corey Kluber, the Klubot, right? And like, and I hear that he was slumped over and everything. I'm like, oh, that guy just has bad posture, you know? So I do trust that you are looking at it and being like, okay, yeah, there is something that you're getting from his reaction that is attributed.
I'm with you though. I don't know. Maybe he's mad about the blister. Maybe he actually had a blister. He gave up the thing and he's like, I should have come out. You know what I mean?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Yeah. Fair enough. So. But yeah, that's a whole aspect of the game. That's so interesting to me is I hear
you're
that
not about in their hands. You're not in their heads. You don't know what he thought when he made that move, you know?
And then there's guys like Randy Johnson. Who's like, yeah, I didn't really love pitching. Like, you're like the most incredible body language guy. Like, I don't understand. Oh, yeah. This makes no sense. Like, I just want to do photography. That's all I want to do, man. Okay. So, I mean, other teams though, that might be dealing. I mean, obviously we have the Mets here, right? We have Freddy Peralta, which just makes all the sense. How could they not want to deal him? They might not get the haul that they thought they might be getting, or at least what they gave up initially for him. But this is a contract year for Freddy Peralta. And the Mets, they have Zach Thorne right now. There's also a lot of talk of Weniger as well coming up at some point. When it comes to those two guys, is there one that you like more? Do you like either one moving forward? Zach Thornton and I believe Jacob Weniger.
Thornton strikes me as a little bit of a Jake Bennett type. It's not exactly a portover, but it's a large mix. Doesn't have quite the command that Jake Bennett does, you know, in terms of the prospects report of Fangraphs though. They give him a 60-70 command, so
yeah, that actually kind of tracks with the way that he's been able to get his cutter inside to righties, Zach Thornton.
Yeah, which is weird. So why did he have like an 11% walk rate in AAA this year? I don't know. Other than that AAA, he's had really tiny walk rates and looks like a guy who can maybe strike out 19 to 20% of guys while keeping the walk rate under 8%. It's not, I think, a guy that ends up being a top 25 guy or anything, but it is a nice home park. So I would circle his name as a streamer. And I would assume that he is, you know, staying in the mix with all the things moving around him. I mean, I don't think Kodai Senga is coming back. I looked at Jonah Tong's minor league game chart and, you know, his game log, and he's not making that much progress in terms of K-BB at least. And even when Clay Holmes comes back, you know, Manaea's a moving piece.
Yeah.
He could be gone, but I think Peralta's gone. So if you've got McLean, Scott, Manaea, Thornton, Holmes, you still got five. To me, then the six becomes Jack Weniger over Tong. If it's not
Jack,
Myers.
Not Jacob. I apologize, everyone. It was Jack.
With Jack, I did take a look. He's, you know, there is some movement in his K minus BB log. Like it's more decent recently. Weniger has also changed his mix a little bit recently, throwing the sweeper a little bit more, the changeup a little bit less. You know, so, you know, there's some changes in his pitch mix. And then lastly, I asked, the model, you know, if his location plus had changed at all. And in the last three starts, his four seamer, sinker and slider have all seen the command increase. Ooh. So, you know, that's the big thing with Weniger, just like Tong. But it's a little bit different question for Weniger, because with Tong, it's a little bit obvious why he has bad command, maybe because of his kind of extreme mechanics, I think.
And also it's a Vulcan changeup too. That is just
like a splitter basically. Yeah. But with Weniger, he throws a four seam sinker, slider, sweeper. Like there's at least a theoretical chance that at some point this clicks and he gets the command to meet his stuff. And I think we'll see Weniger get a shot, because there's no way that even if it is McLean, Scott, Manaea, Thornton and Holmes, that like they don't need an extra guy for a doubleheader or, you know, somebody doesn't get hurt again. So I'm circling Thornton as a streamer, Scott as a guy has to be in, you have to own him in every league at this point, and Weniger as a name for later.
So a few things here. I was actually really curious here. You said that you hope the command for Weniger catches up to the stuff. So how high do you see the stuff with Jack Weniger?
I think it's sort of like pitch by pitch. It's not that like everything is amazing, but I think his changeup is good. I think his sweeper is good. And, you know, his fastballs are mediocre, but he's got a couple of them.
Cool. So I'm just taking a look at literally his last game in Triple A. I'll actually look at, this was on the 21st, so it was yesterday on Tuesday. And I'll even just take a look at the one previously as well, just to get a good sense of what he's doing, how he's attacking guys. And it looks like he went really ham on sliders on the 10th, and then he really pushed it aside to split with his changeup. So it looks like it's four-seamer changeup slider right now with some sinkers. And yeah, as you mentioned, that sweeper getting added. I see the slider. I mean, it's 85 gyro with the sweeper is a negative 10, negative 7. So it's kind of too plainy at 82, 83. Four seamers at 17, vert with an 84 velocity. And it's, I mean, it's like 10 inches drop on that.
Wait, he's throwing right? 84 miles an hour on the four seam?
Sorry, 94. Oh, gosh.
Okay, thank God. I was like, whoa, oh, we got to recalculate.
Okay,
I
mean, better slider.
I mean, he's managing like 26 to 28% K rates most years. So, like,
yeah,
there's some stuff in there.
It's well, not, right. I mean, I think what you're
high stuff,
is,
you know,
is the, I mean, A, I generally see guys who can command a changeup do better in the minors and the majors. And the biggest thing, especially as a right-hander. And it's one of the things I generally like to avoid as a right-hander with a good changeup. And like, that's the main thing. But there is a slider, right, that is effective. It's, I mean, it's like the Kumar Rocker, Bryce Elder, 84, well, 85 gyro, right?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't sound that great to me when it's breaking down that way, but I'm circling that sweeper because, like you said, he's like game to game. He's toggling how much he throws it.
Yeah.
And I think if he ended up being more sweeper change, he could be like a righty swatch.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh man. So that is like it's almost like the Will Warren bucket, but maybe ish. Yeah. Not really though. It's kind of, I'm trying to even think about this. I don't know if I have like a decent comp for that then.
Yeah, because the righty changeup guys that have made it have usually made it with a cutter.
Yeah, or like, right? A sinker. With the changeup, right? It's not really this sweep, right? It's exactly what you're saying, right?
So you're talking about like Waka, Henderson. Like
the Luis Severino is the mold I think of originally with the four-seamer slider change. Like that's what it was, right?
Yeah.
And my camera loves my arm motions and just moves around like it's an actual production studio. It's not. It's just me here with a new camera because my other one is messed up.
Store for later. Yeah. But think about it. You know, the very deeper leagues, like he is someone that you could. I mean, I like about him is proximity. I don't like, you know, in a keeper league having to wait a long time. Like I've been piddling around with Bishop Letson on the Brewers as a prospect. He has more stuff, maybe more upside in the long run, but I also have to wait around and he could get injured and like, I don't know. So Weniger, I think, is on the doorstep at least.
And with Zach Thorin, I kind of see like a Cade Povich almost, but no, Cade Povich got rid of the cutter. I take that one back. It's kind of like Cole Drake, who we just saw a little bit. It's a lot of these like 91 mile per hour guys who don't have necessarily the changeup that works. Right. So like Bennett is like living the swatch lifestyle. Like he loves he's a southpaw with a tight changeup, throws a four seamer way upstairs. Like he doesn't care, has the vert on it. It's amazing.
Yeah, Drake and Thornton's changeups aren't that great.
It's really four seamer cutter right now for him. I guess that's what Tyler Gilbert did when he had his no hitter in his MLB debut or whatever that was. It's not so common. Maybe it's classic CC. I don't know. It's working so far. I mean, if you get those cutters constantly inside of right-handers, that's cool.
But there's no way this produces like a
23 ERA right so far through like 23 and a third innings is just not quite sustainable for Zach Thorin. Okay, I'm going to move off the Mets. There are a lot of other guys to talk about. As you can probably tell, we're not that enthused, guys.
Not okay, so far.
Maybe he's like one or two, like But
do you have anything on Gallagher from the Twins, real quick? Just
we're going to tell you one of them now, but we'll tell you more of them. After this break, I'm gonna tell you who they are. Oh, Mike Gallagher. I'm like, we'll tell you more.
Just kidding. No, I mean, yeah, I'm looking at Ryan Gallagher for the Twins, and he has interesting stuff numbers, but he has a 6.95 ERA. So maybe we should just move on.
Okay, not Mike Gallagher. Okay,
Ryan Gallagher, edit him out.
No, I got it. Eno's just kidding about Ryan Gallagher. Too bad of an ERA. It's near like 7 ERA right now. Yeah. So we're not going to do that. We're just messing with you. But some of the other teams, The first one I think of are the Giants. And the Giants are certainly in a position to sell. It is a, I mean, I think the whole fan base is like, just burn it all down. So you start with Robbie Ray in all likelihood, who's just needs like one start looking normal, and then they can actually, you know, do something with it. I imagine if he goes to a different squad as well, you're probably going to get him to move away from the sinker, and then the four seamer returns. And I think Robbie Ray should have a much better final 2 months of the year. But who would come up to replace this, right? I mean, there's Adrian Hauser just kind of chilling there, but now you have Trevor McDonald out already. So now that slot could be filled there. There's Carson Wisenhunt. And maybe there are some other names. And at least with Carson, I remember in the spring, he was throwing 95, 96. It was 92, 93 since then. But there is a little bit of promise. I'm very curious how Carson would play out. Is Carson your favorite guy in the Giants? Do you like that or not? And who else would it be?
Yeah, I mean, the news is that he's up and then he's down. Interesting. I thought I saw an email that I think the corresponding move for McDonald was Wisenhunt. So let me check
that out. Well, let's say that he does start, you know?
Yeah. The other thing that I don't understand is that somebody told me that he was throwing a cutter, and yet nothing that I have shows that he's throwing a cutter. So do you have the numbers? Is he cutting the four seam?
Oh, that's a good question. I mean, his last game was in the majors, wasn't it? For a doubleheader, I believe. I'll take a quick look at that. But I mean, with Carson Wisenhunt
today was Trevor McDonald placed on the right for an right elbow strain, Tristan backup. So Wisenhunt is not up yet. Mm-hmm. But when I look at the Fangraphs prospective probables list, Wisenhunt is listed for the Giants against the Angels this Sunday.
And then it would be the Padres the following Friday. And the two games that we saw on the 9th and the of July and the 17th of June, it looks like standard four-seamer changeup gyro slider at 85-86 with the 51-degree arm angle. So the 17 inches of vert, not really impressive. It's why he kind of needed that 95-96 that we saw in the spring to get us a little bit excited. But there is, to me, swatch potential with this. I mean, 65% strike rate, 21% swing strike rate on the two games with a changeup. Thus far at 37% usage. That could be interesting. He's also very good, apparently, at avoiding the heart of the plate to lefties. Like, he just goes above or below it and maybe away from it, but like nothing over the plate. And I kind of love seeing guys avoid the heart of the plate as much as possible.
One piece of hope here is that the Stuff Less Platoon splits say that his changeup should be a plus-plus pitch against same-handed guys and opposite-handed guys.
So, you think the Giants are going to do that?
They did in the minors a little bit. He threw it 49 times left on left. So I think if he evens out and becomes kind of the closer he gets to kind of 30-30-30 for me, the better. You know, so he's not quite there against opposite-handed hitters. He threw 548 four-seamers, 370 change-ups, and 94 sliders. So he's very much like a traditional pitcher, fastball change-up, right, with the occasional slider. I would like to see those numbers change a little bit, because the one good thing about this year is that he's showing slightly better command across the board. Mm-hmm. And that's what he's going to need to do, because it's not a wide mix. He doesn't have a very good fastball. I mean, this is a guy that I would be pushing the changeup rate on in the major leagues for sure.
So this is interesting. Last game that Carson Wisenhunt pitched was in AAA on the 19th. He had 13 whiffs on 31 changeups. He threw only four of them against lefties, though. So he faced a lot of right-handers. He attacked the changeup a ton with a changeup there. The movement on the four-seamer was 13 inches of vert as opposed to the 17 he normally gets. The horizontal was 5 as opposed to 11. So I think that sounds like a one-seamer turning into a cutter. Yeah, but they all were clumped together. It wasn't a split, right?
So it wasn't like fiddling around. Like, it was like, this is a new shape, man.
Yeah, this is a new type of four-seamer that you're throwing now. It was a 92-93. Well, I prefer that vastly for Carson. Yeah. I I mean, the way I see this, though, is like if you have an amazing changeup, which he does clearly against the right-handers, then the real thing that he needs is the proper weapon against the lefties, right? And when you think about cut, I mean, sure, you want to survive with the four-seamer to right-handers, okay, but generally, if you have that amazing changeup, that makes that fastball survive. I mean, even look at like Joey Cantillo, right? For a long time before the changeup, sorry, before the curveball took over, like fastball change was still working because the changeup was just that good, right?
That's why I think he should up the changeup, same hand changeup.
I agree with you completely. I think I'd get more excited about cut action because that should be worse against lefties. Be better for righties, but I think he already has that down. Maybe.
Yeah, but he's got a slider, so you could just spam slider four seam. Like,
is it just good enough?
He might be the most interesting guy we've talked about so far in terms of,
oh yes,
there's an opportunity for him. He's got some interesting stuff. If there's one pickup so far, it's Carson Wisenhunt.
Yeah. Yeah. Is there anyone else with the Giants that would interest you? I don't think I found anyone, but I could be overlooking a player here and there. I mean, I feel like the Giants, they could theoretically get rid of multiple if they really cared. You know, Tyler Mahle, maybe someone's like, you know what? Fine. We could use something.
A little bit of a flame for Blade Tidwell.
Oh, that's a really good name. Yes.
And
he was a big part of which deal was that with the Mets to send him over last year? It was the Connor Griffin
Gilbert,
the other guy.
Drew Gilbert. And Tidwell came over for Tyler Rogers, I think.
Tyler Rogers. Nice. Yeah, there we go.
The problem is that he's doing what he's always done, which is, you know, strike guys out, show good stuff, and not command it well. So that's the update there. Actually, you know, is there room for Tidwell? What does the rotation look like right now?
I mean, okay, so you have Robbie Ray and Logan Webb and Landon Roop, and then you have Tyler Mahle and probably Adrian Hauser. So yeah. You get rid of Ray, and we'll see what happens with Hauser. We'll see what happens with Mahle. We'll see. I mean, Roop and Webb.
Yeah, I mean, Mahle gets hurt all the time, so the Tidwell splits are curve and change are plus pitches to opposite hand. His four seam is an 82 stuff plus to the opposite hand, and the sinker is a 72. So, and his cutter is an 83. So he's got good secondaries against the opposite hand, but he doesn't have good fastballs. So he's just been kind of spamming all the fastballs. Mm-hmm. He doesn't locate the slow stuff very well. He locates the hard stuff okay, which, hey, listen, if you've got poor stuff fastballs, but you locate them okay, and then you've got good stuff secondaries, but you don't locate them okay, there might be room for that to work, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, it goes back to the question that Pablo asked me, which is, do you want to throw the right pitch in the wrong spot or the wrong pitch in the right spot?
Yeah. You know? Against same-handed guys, he's basically four-seam sweeper.
Yeah. I remember with Tidwell, too, it was... You know, he almost had it, but it was just you're not taking over an at bat properly. You know, you would watch him with the Mets, and I remember those few games. It's like, oh, you're kind of there, like you have enough velocity, and it looks like your secondaries are good enough, but you can't get away with just kind of going at the glove in the middle, right? You have to actually execute an at bat properly, and then you can be good, right? There are a lot of guys in the league that execute an at bat properly, and it's just like, well. All right, there's my four and runs in five. Okay, see you tomorrow.
And I don't know that he can learn this in the minor leagues because,
yeah,
you know, you're not facing, you're facing inferior, you know,
right. Batters. You're not getting tested properly.
So if it's, you know, for me, the rotation is Webb, Roop, Mahle, Wisenhunt, and Tidwell. I put them both in, and I say, guys, you got 2 months. Like, we're gonna leave you in. Like, don't, like, chill out. Like, don't like think you're going to be sent down after every bad start. Know that this is an opportunity that you should take. And like, let's see you go out there and compete. And what we really want to see is you learning from start to start and adjusting and changing and finding a way to get major league hitters out. So that's what I would do, because the best teams, when they have these like rebuilding moments and they take a step back, what they do is they take the playing time they have and allot it to young players and give them a chance to prove that they should be on next year's team.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So
I mean, you can even look at like
both of those guys.
Yeah. I mean, I love that. I feel that way tenfold. It's not what they did with Bubba Chandler, for example. I feel like would have helped more instead of like the weirdness and the reliever aspect and not be like, here's the ball, go dominate, make sure everything's cool, and then we'll be cool again. And I think about it with Brandon Sproat in the Brewers, that's kind of what they did at the start of the year for him. I mean, there were bad starts galore, and in many cases, he should have been out of this rotation, but they've kept it up with Sproat, and I feel like we've both seen some improvements from him that is a bit rewarding, and I think that Sproat should, benefit from that development in 2027 too. I'm going to move to the other coast, Eno.
Okay.
The Nationals. The Nationals are 51-51, and we know this. It's 2 weeks away. It's like 12 days away, and a lot can happen in 12 days. Like, you can win 12 games straight, Red Sox, and all of a sudden now you're above 500. 14, is it now? 15? I don't even remember.
But the National League is not as wide open, and they have pretty clear flaws in terms of their entire pitching staff.
Right. Except for one guy. Foster Griffin.
Yes. Okay. We got two guys. I like Cade Cavalli.
Okay, Cade Cavalli, you're right. You're absolutely right with that one, but he does have flaws.
Right, he does, yeah. No, I would be talking to Foster Griffin about an extension right now.
Right. So
because they need even if Foster Griffin is a true talent, like four going forward or three,
yeah,
like they need everybody, you know. So I do think he could get traded, and he is on an expiring deal, and he would be, you know, I think that people are missing the point. I've seen a lot of analysis like he wouldn't be that attractive. He'd just be a guy who gets you there. I'm low key. Like, I might start Foster Griffin in game three of the
NLCS. Yes. This is, you know, like, I have a hot take here, you know.
Yeah.
I have a ridiculous hot take. I think, as I'm way too zoomed in because this camera is oh my God, it worked. I figured out the gestures. This is my theory about the playoffs. I think that every team is featuring the same kind of pitcher in the playoffs, and it's hurting them. I think you have to have variety, and variety not just in pitching, but also your offense. And it's the biggest clash I have with, like, oh my gosh, I can't believe what I'm saying, with analytics, because objectively you are right to have like WRC plus higher guys. But if they all come with the same flaws, then there's a problem.
The same approach, right?
Right.
Yeah. I mean,
so I think of like the triple strikeouts in the row of like Aaron Judge, Giancarlo Stanton, and Gary Sanchez for the Yankees, right? And you have to have balance where it's not necessarily about WRC plus, it's about like, this guy is susceptible to this. This guy is susceptible to that. So you need like the contact guys at certain points. You need those guys swing them home. And that's kind of like the big thing, I think, about the pushback, like of modern philosophies, is that a lot of people are like, oh, back in my day, you need this, you need that. I don't care about whatever. I think that's what they're trying to say. And it does affect pitching too. Like, if you have Foster Griffin in there, you're so used to seeing Garrett Cole go out there and dominate, and then you have a reliever after that is the same kind of velocity and everything. And the next day, you got to deal with like a crafty McGee. Like, what?
Yeah, especially in the playoffs, we know that the average fastball in the playoffs is like another tick beyond. So the average fastball now is up to 94.2 or something. And right. So we will anticipate that in the playoffs this year, the average fastball will be over 95 miles an hour. I think it would be a heck of a record scratch to then be like, this guy sits 91.
And not to mention, we've seen it so much. Guys get pulled faster in the playoffs, right? And there's two reasons for that. I mean, I'd say actually even three. One, they are throwing more max effort, so they're going to get fatigued faster. Two, managers are like, yeah, our bullpen is just insane, and we're just going to push them as hard as we can.
And there's rest days.
That go are inefficient because they're throwing harder. They're more strikeout focused. The guys who are pitching in the playoffs, which means that they aren't your Wheeler type, your Alcantara type, your Foster Griffin type, who isn't necessarily going especially out of the zone a ton.
I mean, we're making the case here. Game four of a 7-game series.
Yeah.
It'd be great because you're in the middle of three games in a row. You don't get those rest days for your relievers. You maybe right. give your relievers a little bit of a rest.
And push up Foster Griffin to like six. You can buy that more than like five of Tyler Glasnow in an argument, right? That actually might make a bigger impact. So that's my kind of thought process of it. I don't know how much I agree with it. it's like it's right there, and I'm debating it. Everyone listening can think about it for themselves, of course. But Foster Griffin, I see someone going to Atlanta is just, you have Chris Sale and then Foster Griffin, and it's just, what is this? Two similar-ish looks, except that the stuff is way different.
Yeah,
I think that's a really good fit for them also, because, I mean, that rotation, what is it? Martin Perez and Rayla, and
they might need two guys.
Right. And I know it's an interdivisional trade, which is harder to do. It also would make sense for the Cubs, because he's not necessarily going to be that 23-25% strikeout guy that he has so far. And that defense eats up guys like, saves guys like Foster Griffin a ton. So I think that the Nationals should really explore that one. Is there someone in the minors we're hoping replaces at least Miles Michaelis at this point?
I mean, up in the majors, they got Riley Cornelio, who's been, you know, he's had a couple longer outings, and, you know, they might just move him over. I mean, the problem with the Nationals and the reason why the argument for trading him rather than extending him is that you need multiple players back. I guess could Brad Lord extend back out again?
Sinker guy trying to get outs, maybe. Have Luis Perales. Multiple
three inning outings. So Lord seems like somebody who'd go. He has better command. Cornelio is stuff over command. Lord is command over stuff.
And so is Perales, by the way, who is the most enticing prospect in the he's one for one deal.
Oh, Perales was the high stuff guy that they traded for Jake Bennett. They might like Jake Bennett back right now.
Well, okay, hold on. That's the short term.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, it's the Red Sox have won right now, but Perales is still throwing hard. I mean, he's not killing it, but I think it was something where like he was walking a ton early on and then he was
his finally stuff numbers are beautiful, Perales. Oh my goodness. They're all above 100. There's some really nice numbers here.
And the command numbers?
Not as good, but I expected worse. So he two opposite handers. He's got a 101 location plus on the sweeper, 96 on the change, 99 on the slider, 89 on the four seam, and 89 on the cutter. So that's where he needs to get better.
Yeah, on the cutter, man. Worse. The cutter is the thing. Worse. I would at least be aware of Perales. I mean, he's had a lot of two walk games, and then he had a like a four or five walk game. That's really making the walk rate look worse than it is in recent time. As Eno welcomes in, I can't tell if it's a dog or a cat. This is what, this is a little dog. Oh my God, that is a chonker. Oh, this is why you have to watch the video. Oh my gosh, I've never seen this dog in my life.
Yeah, this is Iggy.
Iggy?
He demands my attention when, he's not that fat, is he?
I mean, I just did not expect anything.
I've been trying to put him on a diet, so...
Sorry, that was a sensitive.
Yeah, actually, Perales, I would, if he got the opportunity, I would rate his ceiling above Tidwell and Wisenhunt, but the floor maybe below them too.
Yeah, so. I think it's too risky for this year. And Susanna and Travis, the other one, Channing, is it? They are hurt at the moment. They are not. No, Sakura. It was Alex Clemmy, I think I was thinking of. They are hurt at the moment. Sorry for my rambling. And you should not be expecting them up at all. It's only really Perales, maybe some Jackson Kent, but you don't really want Jackson Kent. So I wouldn't even look there. Now, another team that might be dealing someone would be the Royals. And I'm just going to tell you right now, I tried to find something that would be good here. I don't see anything. This is... Now, what is up with this class right now? Like last year, we got like Nolan McLean and Cam Schlittler and Chase Burns, and
we burned through it all.
We're waiting for Bubba, and Mrazowski had already been up by now.
We were doing we like buy a box of cards, and you just like ripped. We ripped through all the packs of cards.
Mrazowski, we already talked about Mrazowski.
Yeah. We got nothing left. There's no packs left.
Oh no.
No players left. I was trying to get into Mason Black because I did have somebody in the Giants organization like 3-4 years ago, you know, wax poetic about Mason Black, but I don't see the weapons against opposite-handed hitters, and I kind of think he might have to go to the bullpen just to get some more velocity or something. I feel like they might just like put Randy Dobnak and Mitch Spence out there and let them soak up whatever post-Waka innings are out there.
There was a time that if you told me Mitch Spence was going to soak up innings for the Royals, I would have been so thrilled.
I know, but it just doesn't look anymore. I know this isn't this necessarily the spirit of the enterprise, but I did want to point out that Luinder Avila has a couple of things going on for him.
Yes.
I made a note here. In his last five starts, he has got 24 Ks and 12 walks in 25 innings. His problem has been command, and the nice part is he's got about a 98 location plus over his last five starts, and it seems to be he's found a way to command his slider. So when he needs a strike, he can go to the slider. It's not his best stuff pitch. That is actually, I don't know, his fastball, I guess.
Really?
Or his changeup.
I'm surprised to hear that. I would think it would be the 88 mile per hour slider that has like extra sweep to it.
Duff says it's about average. But I see why they were interested in him, and there's good games in there. I put him on a streamer probably around Wisenhunt level, where he's like home against certain offenses. I might be interested. I want to see some more. If he can pair K's with the command on the slider, there could be another level. But like, he still has a 476 Sierra, 21 K percentage against a 13% walk rate. So like, there's not a lot on field results that you can point to other than being slightly better in the last five starts.
Well, the thing that I really liked about last night's performance specifically was Avila finally got his sinker inside to right-handers. And there's something that I will tell you every single day, is that if you are a pitcher who can throw your sinker on the inner third to the same-handed batter, you will have success. It's just, I know I'm a little biased because that's literally how I got through college. And it's all of his sinkers to right-handers were on the inner half all of a sudden yesterday. It's not necessarily the best movement. I mean, I've seen this actually a couple times now. Fastballs with 10-10 movement. And it's just like, what is that? It's almost like it's a 7-year-old like waiting for their growth spurt, you know?
I did have like Sean Manaea and some other pitchers tell me that they were trying to match the, remember we talked about this with the trying to match the horizontal and vertical on their.
Oh yeah. I do remember that.
But I can't tell you that I've looked around and noticed a lot of great fastballs that have the same vert.
I mean, so maybe Avila's doing it. He's like, you know what? I could have had a 15 vert, but I brought it down to 10 to make sure it matched.
I would say that I would call those two plane fastballs, and you know, some guys have had okay two plane fastballs.
Yeah, I would. I look, I'm not the biggest fan of the movement of it, but the location of it worked. He got six outs on seven balls in play with it. With that sinker yesterday is a huge, huge deal. He had kept his slider down as well, at a 25% swing strike rate on it. The curveball appeared as well to lefties. I mean, it has pretty much the same movement as the slider, but at 83, 84, as opposed to 88, which is so wild. Together, they kind of look like Great Britain in the pitch movement plot. Like, that's how entwined they are. But it's like, I want to like this more. I mean, he throws 96, 97 Avila, and it's just not great movement. And if we're saying, hey, look, we're hoping that the command is there and the slider is more of an average slider, it's a harder sell. But you're right, he has been productive. I mean, he's had a 9 starts since he got the gig in the beginning of June. And what we've seen is two bad games and really just one terrible one, which is the one I attended, by the way. The only time I've ever been to Kauffman Stadium was him versus Amai, where they were both relieved in the first inning.
That was a crazy one. They gave up
and then nothing else happened the entire game. And I was trying to tell my in-laws, like, this is not normal. This is like an hour plus first inning. It's not normal. But Avila is a good call there. Another team that I did want to make sure that we talked about is the Tigers. The Tigers, are they going to deal with Tarik Skubal? They have to, right? It, like, this is not the year for them to make a push. They are currently 6.5 games out of the Central, but it's a 47-54 record. So if they're going to make the playoffs, it needs to be the Central or go on that ridiculous run that they had last year. And keep in mind, Flaherty just hit the IL. You've had some health trouble with Mize already twice this year. There's a lot of opportunity here. This is not a Sawyer Gibson Long plug. I swear to you guys, it's not. But I want to make aware to y'all that there's a guy there and there's a guy in another team which is going to blow your mind and you're going to be like, absolutely not, Nick, but maybe. I'll tell you who those two guys are after this break. Coming back from Tommy John, Jackson Jobe. You might have forgotten about him.
Ooh, that's right. When,
but at some point, we might see Jackson Jobe up, and I would imagine, unlike how it was initially, he should be in the rotation. Because I don't think the Tigers are going to be in that playoff hunt in September, and you want to put him in a position to start next year. So you might...
I have a slightly different take, which comes to the same conclusion, which is just that I kind of think that they do have a chance of even winning that division. They've been slowly, like, they're above 500. They're, like, 2 games above 500 in the last 14. They're, like, 4 games above 500 in the last 30. You know, all the projections say they're the best team in the division. The Guardians, you know, haven't quite run away with it. You know, the Tigers are...
Ramirez.
Come on.
Was it Ramirez being out? Certainly it hasn't helped. Their rotation, I mean, if you ask me, the Guardians, get out of there, Iggy, who I assume is named after Golden State Warrior Iguodala.
A little bit.
But
the other dog, the Guardians, I mean, Buster.
They could add another pitcher, honestly. I mean, do they want Slay Ciccone or Logan Allen as their sixth, essentially? Or sorry, five?
All I'm saying is I think the Tigers won't trade Skubal, and I think they'll stick in it, and I think they'll get closer, and I think they'll want to turn the tables on the Guardians, who took the division from them. So I think there's a chance that they stick in it. But I still think Jobe makes his way into the rotation just because, you know, Flaherty's got flexor tendonitis. That's not good. Verlander's a day away from retiring. Casey Mize has been battling hamstring and other issues all year. Fromber looks out of shape and terrible right now. So, you know, Jobe. And then the last part is, no matter what you think about the Tigers this year and their current situation, you want Jackson Jobe to pitch for you next year. Yeah. And if you want to pitch for you next year, he has to put some innings in this year. You know, you can't. Like if the Tigers are going to be good in 2027, then they need to have what, 80 innings, 100 innings of Jobe, and you can't have Jobe go from 10 innings to like 150 innings. I don't think they'll do that.
Okay, this is the thing that I think really just bothers me a ton. I mean, I get it from like a fan perspective of like you want to root for your guys, you never want teams to sell, etc. When you have such a huge value in Tarek Skubal on the market. I mean, let's be honest here. The bidding wars for Tarek Skubal are going to be through the roof, right? Mm-hmm. You have a way to elevate your franchise for years. I mean, even you want to say even the Juan Soto deal, they were like, did they really get enough? I mean, like there's Gore in there, there's Wood, there's Abram.
Oh, they got enough. That was
yeah. Well, that's what I'm getting as like, okay, you know, can we actually get guys that are worthwhile, etc.? Yes, you can, right? And I mean, sure, that was for more years than it is for this, but come on. This is the trade that can all of a sudden win you the World Series more so than any, right?
You don't want to piss away. Yeah, they have a 30% chance of making the playoffs, according to Fangraphs.
I know, but think about, okay, so then like making the playoffs, fine. Winning the World Series.
Yeah.
And what are the percentages of that? Okay, what are your odds in future years by cashing this in, right? If I'm a Tigers fan, this is how I get the foundation back. This is how I really, truly build for 27, 28, 29, because it's not like they have a bad foundation right now. You have now things that continue it on for a while. This is how you constantly
McGonagall, like, Green, Dingler, like that's a really good core.
Exactly. So for me to suggest that, hey, cool, you have this very small sliver this year and then turn down what would theoretically be a much larger chance consecutively moving forward because of those acquisitions. I would be really shocked if they decided against that. But then again, what was it last year? Oh, yeah, they didn't. No, it wasn't John Gray. Wasn't it something ridiculous where a team didn't trade away? Was it the Rockies? Not Joe Ryan.
The Rangers?
Or the Tigers. I remember there was one that's just like made no sense. Yeah, it was John Gray 2 years ago from the Rockies. I didn't understand whatsoever. We could see one of those where it's just like,
The Angels don't sell. They should have sold more often. The Angels should be selling, I think, Detmers and Soriano.
Oh, completely.
One. But, you know, the reports are they won't. You know, I think that maybe John Mozeliak, it's a vibes-based analysis a little bit, but I'm getting from his comments and stuff a little bit more like maybe he's like for one, they never consulted with Artie Moreno before they hired John Mozeliak. So, you know, like Mozeliak may feel like he has a little bit of power in there and he doesn't have to listen to Moreno. So Mozeliak has to look at this team that's pretty bad and, you know, doesn't and seems to be stuck and doesn't have a great farm system. It's not like they can be like, oh, but next year we have these guys coming.
Right, exactly.
And think that he's got to restock the cupboard a little bit. I don't know who I might trade Soriano over Detmers because he's had a couple Tommy Johns and, you know, there's a pretty big health risk there that people might be ignoring or might be willing to ignore to get somebody of his caliber. But if I could get back a couple pieces, and I think I would probably prioritize a little bit of pitching, you know, just, I don't know. I might take anything actually. No, I just mean like, you know, like give me the best stuff because
yeah, right,
his arm is not good. And, you know, they're stuck in the water. Anyway, I can't, you know, I don't love Ryan Johnson. I don't love Caden Dana. I don't love Aldegary. I tried Jason to
Rodriguez. It's not really working.
Yeah, his arm slot changed and like he lost life on the four seamer. And now he's kind of like a bad fastball, bad breaking ball, good changeup guy. Like,
yeah, he's fastball changeup from the right side without he can't figure out his breaking balls and it's not it.
Yeah, all of a sudden I'm just kind of out on him. So one thing that's kind of interesting is that George Klaassen in his last four starts, three of his last four starts in the minor leagues, he has had average command.
That's good.
Yeah.
That's good for Klaassen. Yeah. But guys, Klaassen throws like 99 and we just want him to be able to command. That's really all we
could have. If you could have a 97 location plus in the major leagues, I'd be more interested in him. So I don't know. That's a long shot. That's probably the lowest floor of any of the guys we've mentioned, but the ceiling
about that. I don't know. We've mentioned a lot of guys here.
We were talking about Avila and some other guys. You're right. Some guys that could be relievers. But
I think is a really, really good call because that is someone who actually could make that impact who should show up regardless.
Yeah.
In the second half. I don't see why after already having Klaassen up for a moment, they wouldn't bring him back up if he is looking better, as you're saying, with his command too. So really good call there. Do you have any ridiculous guess that I have of the guy that I'm going to mention? I might have mentioned it last week or 2 weeks ago. I'm still just so curious. I haven't followed any reports or anything. I'm just, at some point it will happen. It's someone who's coming off of Tommy John surgery. And we haven't really seen pitch well since 2023. 24 was just an absolute joke of a season. He pitches for he's now signed by an AL West team. He is a left-hander. He was formerly on this team.
Dallas Keuchel.
Oh my gosh. Sorry. No, Jordan Montgomery.
Oh yeah. You know, I just recently saw his name in a transaction thing and I was like, what is he up to? What organization is he with?
It's the Rangers, I believe. Yeah. Did he just have a transaction? I thought he signed with 1 year with the Rangers.
I was looking at a previous transaction. So the Rangers traded for him the year that they won the World Series. So I was looking at successful trades at trade deadlines, you know, for teams. So yeah, he is with the Rangers. He's in AAA and his minor league numbers are such that he is not walking anybody. Not striking out many people and doesn't have good top line results.
That's wonderful. That's really.
But he's never a guy who struck out a lot of people. So at least he's not walking anybody.
There you go. Jordan Montgomery, I noticed he just pitched on Saturday in AAA. So I'm going to just take a quick look and report what I see from that start.
Oh, God, my eyes.
I see 90 miles per hour, not 92.
90.
With a curveball that was the death ball that passing called. It was Gallons. Gallons was a death ball pass. I'm never going to let you forget this.
I thought it was Fairbanks.
Fairbanks? Stairbanks?
Yeah, his breaking ball is kind of straight up down power.
Well, there was a major article during the World Series. I think it was 20.
No, I know what you're talking about. I just always thought in my head, I always think of Fairbanks.
Oh, I got you. Then you have the four seamers at 94. Sorry. So, my gosh, 90. Just 90. Barely.
You've said enough. Say no more. Say no more.
Changeups, too, which is really weird for
Spencer Miles. You a fan?
Spencer Miles. That was Paul Spohr's pick. He throws somewhat hard, but like
it's mostly good breaking balls, meh fastballs.
Yeah, I don't know. It's pretty meh to me. This is a struggle, guys. I really wish like Carlos Ogrande wasn't hurt and was going to be used as a starter. Maybe River Ryan finally appears, right? River Ryan, look, the Dodgers, I know they probably won't get his opportunities for X, Y, and Z reasons, but Ohtani's knee's now hurting. They've been pushing Sheehan and Wroblewski with the idea of like, we're going to ride that as long as they're healthy. Hope they start the entire year, but we'll see. Glasnow and Snell, we'll see when they return. I mean, I know Snell had his rehab. Glasnow hasn't yet. And you might see River Ryan appear. River Ryan is dope. He's got a super hard slider, 91. Hard fastball, of course, too. Second he comes up and starts, I'm in. But it will be Dodgeritis. But there could be some ramifications of whatever goes down that makes it that River Ryan appears somewhat soon.
Yeah, that was a devastating hamstring injury that really kept him out of the time that he could have, you know, challenged Wroblewski. You know, now Wroblewski is throwing a sweeper, a splitter. He's throwing 96. He's actually striking people out. Wroblewski looks fully in command of that roster spot now.
94 now, silently. Yesterday was 94. Like, no, Wroblewski, no!
But this, I mean, with the sweeper and the splitter, he still got 11 strikeouts, didn't he? So,
oh, no, he did. Yeah, 7 strikeouts in his last game. Absolutely were cool. But yeah, that was.
If we're into the out of left field part of the podcast, I've got a trade for you. It is Kyle Hart and I don't know, some guy named Cash or Cade or
consideration
water fountain. No, I mean one of these young pitchers that Preller bought recently that's not that close to the major leagues, right? Mm. So, you know, a faraway prospect and Kyle Hart for Michael Wacha with some money paid down. And the idea being that the Royals put Kyle Hart in the rotation and build up this other guy and save some money and whatever it is. I mean, I think this makes a fair amount of sense for both sides. Maybe there has to be a third arm in there. Because Michael Wacha is under team control for next year at a fairly good price. But one of the reasons I wanted to highlight Kyle Hart is that he throws a splitter and a blinker that are well rated. His sinker is actually pretty well rated. He's got this interesting league average arm slot, but multiple fastballs that come out of that arm slot and then surprising sweep. Surprising horizontal movement given his arm slot. So there's a lot of things he does really well. And I'm a little surprised that his top line results aren't that good, but still just a 21% strikeout rate and an 8% walk rate. If he continued those things in a rotation should lead to better than a 5 ERA.
Right.
So I think he could step in and give Kolek-esque results for the Royals. And, you know, they could say, you know, he's our stopgap situation. We've got a club option for next year. We get to, we'll put him in the rotation, see if we want to, you know, use that club option. You know, that seems to be like a very realistic type trade, you know, that
yeah.
could totally happen. And it wouldn't produce any stars anywhere on either side. But if Kyle Hart was in the rotation, he would be a streamer for me. He'd be a very interesting, like much deeper league. Like I said, on that sort of Kolek level, I would be interested in.
All right. I'm going to give you one trade. And it's a guy who we haven't talked about at all yet. But when I think about teams that just need to do something, and I really need to, I don't know, they need some sort of extra energy, it's the White Sox. The White Sox, you got to bring in something here.
Especially on the staff. I think I'd like them so much more if they had one or two more pitchers.
Right. So I'm going to go to another place that, honestly, I kind of treat these two teams the same in my head. And that's the Chicago White Sox and the Baltimore Orioles. Right? Just kind of like, you know, like you're maybe a little excited for them. You don't have the best expectations. They have a generally big fan base that's like, oh, hey, really loud about it. But like, what is going on with them? Okay, they're doing well, but like, are they doing well? You know? And Trevor Rogers to the White Sox, I think fits well because it's not like a star going to the White Sox. It's not like they're going to step on someone else necessarily. Trevor Rogers is pitching really, I think, much better now in 94, 95 up in the zone.
Free agent to be.
He's more of a veteran presence than a lot of those guys on that staff right now. He's a lefty as well. Maybe can help out Anthony Kay. But really with Sean Burke leading the way in the White Sox and Davis Martin and friends, I think that they need Trevor Rogers badly there. So that's the one I'm going for. Who are they going to give up? I don't know.
They gave up David Sandlin and Sandlin was immediately put into the Royal Orioles rotation.
Oh, that's awesome. I love that. You know, I think Sandlin is so much better than how he's turned out so far.
Right? I'd be interested.
I would be very interested in that one. Also, really nice camera angle. That'd be cool to see for Sandlin.
Because you don't like the White Sox camera?
The White Sox is a little bit too far to the right. It's like, you know, but you get dead on. You get dead on in Baltimore. It's beautiful. That is going to end this one. I know guys, not the most exciting, ridiculous podcast we've had. I mean, Cole Drake came up, huh? Isn't that fun? No. Right.
Right about the Kyle Hart trade, I will mic drop.
When
it's
will the
so
Rays
specific
get Billy Falter? When will they get Bailey Falter?
Anybody could have had Bailey Falter. He's just outrighted.
I know. They're just waiting for their time. Mason Ingler, there's another one, but the Rays, they're not gonna, the Rays are kind of fine. Right, their rotation.
Do you
right
have a
now,
Mitch Bratt opinion, real quick?
Oh, who?
Mitch Bratt, the guy
not Mitch Bratt. No,
the guy who throws his whole body like sideways.
It's fine. It's okay. I don't. It's funny. I sat down and watched more Mitch Bratt after Eric said the same thing, and I was like, "This isn't that weird." I understand, like the follow through is.
It's kind of a little hop there.
Yeah, it's funny. I don't see it normally. Like if I'm actually focusing on a windup, I need to only just focus on a windup and look at that.
And then you're looking at the location. You're not really looking at the follow through.
Yeah. I'm looking at the catcher.
Yeah. Yeah. You're so looking at where the pitch ends up and how it moved.
What's the problem, guys? And everyone's like, look at the follow. I'm like, oh, okay. Yeah, Mitch Brad, Mitch Flat.
Mitch whatever.
Yeah. Mitch meh. No. But yeah, it's, I don't know if you've seen my streamer chart. Like I have a very specific streamer chart, which is like Nick Pollock. So yeah, come on in. It's a streamer chart that I made on a stream once that is, you know, when is a good time to stream pitchers, right?
I've seen that. Yeah.
The last valley is now before the next valley, which is, I guess, end of September, right? But August and September are beautiful times to stream because you do have these changing of the guard, new things are going on.
Some of these pitchers that we've been talking about, some of them will turn out to be good.
Right. And there'll be pitchers we have no idea who they are and they just appear and we go, oh, we should have mentioned that guy.
Yeah.
What's wrong with us?
I will be kicking myself. I'll be like, how did we miss that guy?
Oh my God. Like Brody Hopkins, but he can't find the zone.
Then maybe he'll just have a great stretch and he'll find it and he'll be up.
Now, maybe Castillo gets traded. Luis Castillo gets traded, as they've been so many people have been saying, for Casey Schmidt or whatever it is, whatever. Doesn't matter. If he gets traded, he has to still 5-man rotation, but somehow the Mariners have just avoided injuries since all of them have been back. And Cade Anderson, even though I'm like, this stuff isn't that good. How is this working so well?
Yeah, I watched him in the Futures game. I was like,
he's a swatch.
But they were like, this is Max Fried.
No, it's not.
I don't think it's Max.
No, it's not. Max Fried cuts. Max Fried is like the ultimate Swiss Army knife.
Plus, Max Fried had this like, even if you're comparing Max Fried then, you know, to Cade Anderson now.
Yeah.
Max Fried had that breaking ball that you're like,
oh, yeah, he had a slider in that second half of that rookie year. That was just like, that's great. You found the slider. This is wonderful. Oh, here's a changeup now. Here's a cutter. And sorry, the four seamer is a cutter and a two seamer. You know, it's no. No. Anyway, Ryan Sloan is better. So that's going to end this podcast. Eno, what can we expect from you moving forward? I remember last week you kind of hinted at something that you were two big stories.
My rankings are coming up Friday in my rearview mirror were the two breaking stories, the new ball story, and then they banned iPads. They banned generative AI programs off of the iPads in the dugouts. Teams were using iPads to tell them what pitch to throw next. And then six teams are now calling pitches from the dugout. So they were using generative AI programs that were like, call a slider. And then they were telling the pitcher from the dugout,
slider. The thing is, we didn't guess this was happening because
it doesn't, no, it's not that crazy. You're like, yeah, yeah. Surprised more people. There were only 10 power users. I was like, man, I'm surprised that there weren't like 20, you know, but
well, I mean, I'm surprised that 10 stuck with it, honestly.
Yeah, but that too. But I think when people hear AI, they're like, oh, was it right ever? But you know, it's not necessarily just AI. It's like machine learning and it's just the key word for me is generative. So they had a program that was taking in live information.
That's the problem.
And if you take in live information, the program is going to be better. Because if you say before the game, oh, I think he's going to go slider change, against you. And then you come into the game and he hasn't thrown slider change, or the slider's not being commanded well or whatever, your generative program can be like, he's not going to go slider change. That was the plan before the game. But right now it's really pretty obvious. He's going to go forcing.
Right. I mean, to me, it's like when I hear live, I'm like, I want to know the biometrics of the hitter. I want to know like how he's moving in the box.
And that's, I think, where it was going. I'm not sure it was all the way there, but you can use computer vision. So those iPads have video, right? And if they have video coming in, you could use computer vision to replicate all the stuff.
No tech. Just no tech.
That has been a take that's out there. The players, though, they basically collectively bargained for the iPads after the video rooms were closed. Because the video rooms were closed after the sign stealing scandals.
Yeah, right.
And the players said, we want to be able to look at locations. We want to be able to look at our bodies, look at our swings, look at our release points. We want to be able to look at our pitches and our swings. And so they collectively bargained for the iPads with the video part. It was the coaches that then started taking advantage of the iPads.
Yeah, okay, gotcha. Okay.
Coaches in the front office.
Nice. The whole thing is just whatever. Guys, just look at, as a pitcher, it's just an important skill. Learn the body language. I know we're talking about body language again, but seriously, you got to do that. I messed up. I messed up a lot, and I messed up all of you watching right now. Eno's putting out his rankings on Friday. He didn't tell me. Otherwise.
Next week, can go ranking.
No, but Eno, you want to do the rankings before you put out the rankings.
Because
we can make sure we're okay. Like, where do you have Sean Burke?
Sean Burke, your ideas, I have them too low.
I have no idea.
Yeah, I have Sean Burke. I've been actually moving him up because one thing I did for this one was last 30 K-minus BB. And in his last 30, he has amazing. A 28% K-minus BB.
Yeah.
So I've got him into the top 60 and he may have a up arrow beyond.
Okay, so if you're telling me he's like 57 or something, there are 56.
That is exactly it. 57 behind.
Well, because you didn't say top 55. So
I said behind Emerson Hancock and ahead of Mackenzie Gore, Freddie Peralta, and Will Warren.
Okay. I look, 56 other guys. If anyone in a 12-teamer is playing right now, are there really 56 other pitchers that you would rather have?
361 Sierra. It's then a 414 projection.
Well, I mean, I'm acknowledging that at least that his last month is different pitcher, Sean Burke. Now, I also acknowledge that Jacob Lopez, who I know at the top of that list, had his 13-game stretch last year where he was like 30% K rate and 11-2 record or something stupid in the 2 ERA. or better, right? It happens. Guys go on stretches. I'm not saying that Burke is the next coming of, you know, top 20 guy next year or something like that. It's something that I move him into. It gets really hard now. Is okay, guy is doing well right now. At the beginning of the year, but like, yeah, Jose Soriano, get out of here. But you only have 2 months left. So there's only so much time to lose it. I think I have in my top 40 right now. I'm like top 35, maybe, Sean Burke. Because I couldn't have him above like Robbie Ray at this point. Or even Shane McClanahan. It's like Burke is just killing it. And McClanahan's good. I trust him. He's fine, but it's not like I need to do this. I have him above Hunter Brown, Eno. Because Hunter Brown's hurt, I think. I think he's still messed up. Is forcing.
Yeah, Hunter Brown has the biggest minus arrow. I got Hunter Brown at 36. He's a big dropper. Yeah.
So
and I might end up with Burke, you know, in the top 50 because just at the back end of the top 50, I have Melton and Robleski with their similar last 30 K minus BBs and similar projections.
I'm so curious what your 30s are. Because I'm like, that's like 31, 32 for me.
I've got Shane McClanahan, Sonny Gray, Griffin Jacks, Ranger Suarez, Reed Detmers.
Oh, Reed Detmers is that high.
Yeah.
Well, this is the podcast we could have had.
Yeah.
If he had told me. One last question, Eno. This is the only one I'll ask. What do you think is your highest ranking that I would be like, absolutely not? The most like one, you know, that I'm going to look at it and would want to fight you on it. And not fight, you know, do my bit. I'm trying to think of who that would be.
MHTN at 44. Ryan Weathers at 48.
Maybe. I understand Dustin May at
54.
At some point. What's that?
Dustin May at 54.
Oh, I mean, I would fight you a little bit, but I like Dustin May. So I guess it's not that ridiculous.
Freddie Peralta at 59.
Where's Jared Jones right now?
Number one with the bullet. I've got him 18.
Okay. I am going to fight you there.
Yeah.
Two starts. It's two starts of throwing 60% four seamers. And I'm happy he's doing it. But two starts.
I don't know. Last 30 K minus BB is 32%.
Two starts will change that.
Sierra's a 325.
And this is like cherry picked part. And not to mention 30 days is like what, four starts for him because of the All-Star break too?
Well, one thing that happened that was really interesting for me was my top 17. I was like, bang, bang, boom, love it. Yuri Perez is in my top 17. So my top 17 felt really good. And then I got to Jared Jones, and it's really weird after it. Joe Ryan, Shohei Ohtani, who I didn't know what to do with the injury rule. Did you take him off?
Oh, no, I got rid of him.
You got rid of him. I left him on.
He's on the IL in Yahoo and like CBS. And ESPN.
He's on the IL as a pitcher?
Yeah.
Oh, they're monkeying around with it. That's interesting. But also up there, Brian Wu, who's like a half home, half away guy right now, is really weird. Braxton Ashcraft, who's in a really bad stretch right now, but
he is.
I couldn't find a real reason for it. And Gavin Williams, who, you know, everything looks good, but, you know, he's abandoned the cutter.
The last game, you know, he got burned by the very last pitch before a rain delay. It was a 3-run homer on a sweeper up that was hit for a 3-run shot. And before the guy even hit home plate Vargas, they called it. It was like the fifth inning.
The next one is Bryce Miller, who everything looks good, but the velo is going down with every start. It's gone down.
And he's probably hurt. Peyton Tully, Zardo, Dylan Cease.
I guess Peyton Tully's got an innings limit coming sometime.
Does he really?
Yeah, he's passed the next start.
Well, yeah, but the Red Sox said that?
No, it's true. But I mean, it's something you have to like consider at least on some level when you're ranking him. So there was this weird thing where I was like, I'm really happy with my top 15, top 17. And then I'm surprisingly have question marks about 15 through 20.
Okay.
Guys, the question marks start super early because we've got 60 injured pitchers out there that should be on these rankings.
Yeah, my injured table is something.
So long.
I might have 10 guys or 11 guys that say 1 through 10, which is kind of wrong. It's also kind of funny. You have like teams like the Rays. I mean, sure, Ryan Pepiot, but there are a lot of rotations that haven't actually been touched this season in a significant way. I mean, again, I was mentioning the Mariners.
Yeah, like the Mariners is crazy. Yeah.
But like, you know, you see McClanahan, Rasmussen, and Jax, and it's like they're fine. Everything's okay there. You see Chris Sale's still there, and DeGrom, even though he had the glute thing, like
Chris Sale's hit 99 more often this year than any other year than 2018.
It's so cool.
Yeah,
I love it. I love it so much. All right, guys, I am going to actually end this now. Yeah. So sorry again. I apologize. It's all my fault.
I gotta file some rankings, man.
Go away. Yeah, you gotta review them again. Hopefully, I'll have a better camera next time.
Move
guys.
Sean Burke up.
Just think of me.
Yeah.
Okay. Come on, Dustin May or Sean Burke. Dustin May. I mean, why would? I mean, she and Anderson think she'd be better, but like, Sean Burke's just killing it. You just gotta do that.
All right.
Okay. Until next week, guys. That's Eno Saris. Go read his rankings, of course. My name is Nick Pollock. We'll talk about the craft of pitching again next week. Bye-bye.